Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Next hour of the show, our thanks to Sean Leahy joining us from NBCSports.com as we preview Game 7 between Tampa Bay and Washington. And also Jordan Rodriguez joined us in the opening half hour on the sale of the Carolina Panthers officially to David Tepper, the former Steelers minority owner. And coming up in this half hour, Chris Soleri, Lansing State Journal. We'll talk about the $500 million that's been allocated by the Michigan State Board of Trustees to the victims of Larry Nassar and where the money's going to come from. We'll talk to him about that and other issues. And also Mark Wogerich in the final half hour to discuss Matt Millen. Mark is the one that broke the story nationally from the Allentown Morning Call. We'll talk to him about that in the final half hour of the show today. Today's show is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Phillies tonight and the Braves. Jake Arrieta goes tonight for the Phils. 7:05, first pitch, 6:30 the airtime on News Radio 1070 WKOK and on WKOK.com. Before we get to Chris Soleri, time now for the play-by-play call of the day. Yesterday, we had Kenny Albert on the show. His dad last night, Marv Albert, called the game between Golden State and Houston. The Rockets won it 95-92. We all know that James Harden can hit threes, but this time, he was able to go over Draymond Green and dunk.
Here's Harden with the drive. Bam! Draymond Green and a lot of chatter out there following that shot.
Oh! 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 Oh!
Anything else you want to say?
Oh!
Chris, you okay?
Oh, it's nothing like a body-to-body dunk to put some man on the ground, especially when a smaller player wins attacking a basket. That's a poster.
That's Chris Webber, Reggie Miller, and Marv Albert on TNT last night as James Harden was able to slam it over Draymond Green. Ironically, Michigan State's Draymond Green. We'll talk to Chris Soleri of the Lansing State Journal in a few moments. And Houston won last night 95-92 after Golden State went stone cold in the fourth quarter last night. So that series is now tied at 2-2 heading back to Houston, and the Rockets have regained home court advantage in the series. All right, I mentioned Draymond Green, Michigan State. Well, Michigan State is going through very, very tough times right now. Very tough times. And Larry Nassar created it. And Michigan State has now allocated $500 million in settlement money, $425 million to the 332 known victims, $75 million in reserve for any others that come forward. Let's bring in Chris Soleri, who was already a dad with a little girl, but now, in the last week, twins born into the Soleri family. Twin girls. Chris, congratulations and good luck getting some sleep, my friend.
Thanks, Steve. It's, we went from 1 to 3, and it's a quick leap. Let me tell you something. A lot of the sleepless nights, you start to learn a thing or two about staggering. That's stagger out the feeding so at least one is happy and content while the other one is sleeping.
Well, first of all, the most important, as long as they're both doing well.
They are. Right? They are.
And do they have a bigger brother or sister?
They have a bigger sister, okay. So it is now. I am now completely outnumbered with three girls and a wife in the family. So I've retreated to the basement. This is my fortress of solitude, if you will. My
sanctuary.
And you know, there's enough supplements and nutrients down here to last me for a nuclear winter, so or at least until they turn 8.
So. Well, I have five. I can tell you right now, even when they turn 18, there's not it's not total peace.
That's what I said. I said when they turn 25 and they get off the car insurance, that's when I
there
like
you go. Again. Now you take that big deep breath. Obviously, you've had the tough story to cover with Michigan State. The $500 million that's agreed upon by the Board of Trustees, I think what, $425 goes to victim settlements now, another $75 in reserve. That is a gigantic number. What did you think when you saw the number?
It didn't surprise me. And I think maybe even I thought it was a little lower than I expected it to be. Just because, you know, I think what was the final number for Penn State? Around $100 million, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, right around there, 101, 102.
And you were talking about, you know, a dozen victims versus 300 and some. I don't know. There's going to be so many other things that, you know, these victims are going to go after in terms of medical malpractice. I mean, there's so many layers to this that it's so far beyond what went on at Penn State. That's why I thought maybe it would be better. So in terms of the $500 million, I think that's, if you can call on Michigan State's end, a bargain, because I really think that a lot of these victims and their attorneys, they want more than anything that there to be real change exacted at Michigan State, and the kind of change that will do some good for the other major schools around the country involving sexual predators and sexual harassment and sexual assault, and all of those things that are little bits and layers to such a weighty story and multi-layered story. So I do think that, that was for Michigan State. Now the question is, where are they going to get the money?
That was the next question. How do you get the $500 million? I mean, I realize that you and I are financial geniuses and we have ideas. But how are they going to get the $500 million?
Clearly, I'm in the right business for that.
Oh,
that's a good question, because they do have record enrollment coming in this fall. Now, how many of those that record enrollment came about and were decided upon in January before the victim impact statements and before everything kind of went to hell? I don't know. I mean, it everything extrapolated from January on. So, maybe this wasn't going to be the point where you see the dip in enrollment, but you got to wonder if the next year or two you will, with those high school sophomores and juniors and even freshmen who are deciding upon colleges. And, you know, kind of that's where you'll see the real impact of what everything that's transpired here has on families and especially with as we talked about with me. I mean, you know, I live 5 miles from campus, 10 miles from campus, and with young daughters. I want to see change. I mean, I have a personal investment. I spent money going from Western Pennsylvania to Michigan State. I spent out-of-state tuition money. Mm-hmm. I spent tax money now. I want that place to be safe for when my daughters can get to that point if they choose that they want to go there. I want to feel safe and comfortable that they can go there. Where will that money come from? Are they going to, the state has really pretty much put the clamps down and said, no, this is on Michigan State. We're not going to give you additional funds for this. And, you know, I think they're going to be hard pressed to try and raise tuition on this. Because, I mean, again, you know, the oversight that was there, or the lack of oversight that was there from those in charge is really what continues to evolve out of this story as you see more and more people getting implicated, or you know, that they had knowledge, a deeper knowledge of what was going on. So then, you know, where do you dip into? You can't dip into. You're going to have to dip into some funds, or you're going to have to make some cuts. And that's the position where former Governor John Engler, now the interim president here, is kind of put in a bind. I mean, they President Louisiana Simon, before she announced her retirement, right at the pinnacle and the apex of the Nassar trial, the Vimpex hearings. She had a, I think it was about a 10-year, $1 billion capital campaign. The university had just wrapped up about a year or two ago. To Engler back in March, He said that money can't be touched because it's all been earmarked for this, that, or the other. Well, they're going to have to try and figure that out because, you know, you might have $1 billion in pledges for donations and all of that, but what does that pledges mean? Is that still intact? You know, there's so many things I think that, you know, this has to be their priority. They have to find this money to deal with this and then move on.
One of the differences, I think, for Penn State, it ended up being, I want to say, 33, 34 different individuals along the way getting some sort of settlement, I think. But it happened in increments.
Yeah.
This is all being done at once. Is there anything that you feel Michigan State took out of what happened here that they've tried to apply to this because they learned something from what happened here or what didn't?
You mean in terms of what happened?
I mean, how to
Mass or
about how to react to something like this based on what somebody else had to go through.
Well, they've been learning themselves on the fly, and at times doing a very poor job of it. And you know, I think you know, just within the last 2 weeks or so, one of the trustees, Brian Masalem, he issued full support for the victims and wants them, you know, wants to really exact change and initiated a plan. But he also admitted that, you know, with Michigan State's Board of Trustees, it's basically one against seven. I mean, he's one of eight. And, you know, his plan that he floated is something that I think that in seeing some of the responses of the victims and their representation, that they and other advocates, they like the plan, but you know, you have to convince the other seven on a board to do this. You know, and they've been hard pressed to do that. They've been focused on the litigation side. They haven't really been focused necessarily on the rehabilitation of and the fixing of the major problem with sexual assault and all of those things. So, I think if Michigan State that's got to be their primary mission right now. And then everything kind of dovetails off that.
Bill Beekman is the interim athletic director. Where are they in the search for a permanent athletic director?
Nowhere. That's, you know, I heard from a lot of people in Pittsburgh the name Heather Light at Pitt floated, but the reality is Michigan State hasn't even gotten to that point of discussing candidates. I mean, they don't have even a short list because they've been dealing, the administration and the higher-ups have been dealing first and foremost with the Nassar settlement and fallout. And then beyond that, I mean, you know, what quality athletic director candidates are going to want to come into a situation where you don't have a president in place, a permanent president? There's so many things that need to happen out above an ordinary athletic director for as important a position as that is before you can really start to talk about legitimate and viable candidates. But I think that the last presidential search, major presidential search that went on here at Michigan State, sort of been back right before I went, I came here in like 92, 93, took about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And at this point, they're only a couple months. So, you know, and that change also resulted in the athletic director change back in, I take that back, the athletic director change happened right before the presidential appointment. And, you know, that didn't work out so with Dean Baker. I think she was only here for about 2 years with Peterman before moving on, and she's been one of the more outspoken people about the culture of Michigan State right now. I don't know. I think that you really have to get that president in place first, though,
right?
Because, I mean, you're talking about the ultimate boss of Mark D'Antonio, Tom Izzo, and the athletic director.
And you mentioned Mark D'Antonio and you mentioned Tom Izzo. Okay, now that some dust all has been clearing, do they appear to be in good shape there?
Well, I mean, that's the big question. I mean, there was a federal lawsuit filed about a month and a half ago involving three former basketball players who were unidentified in the federal lawsuit. Is against Michigan State, so these players aren't involved, but they were accused. They were basically in this federal lawsuit accused of raping a girl in 2015. So that's, I think, the third instance now that, that had no police report involving the basketball program. So that still remains an issue hanging over Tom Izzo. He hasn't really talked about any of these issues. I've heard from some people that he had no idea about this until the federal lawsuit was filed. And I know the people at Michigan State didn't know this federal lawsuit was going to be filed until it dropped. So you're talking three instances since 2009, 2010 of alleged sexual assault with the basketball program involving, I think, eight players. And Mark Antonio's got six incidents involving 11 players since 2007 when he was hired. So there's a lot of things going on there. I believe that some of this, I think for both of those guys, is dependent on whether or not they knew anything. And I think Mark D'Antonio has been adamant that, you know, he responded properly and timely when he found out about things. So I think they're safe. But then again, what you're looking at again, like about who's going to be your boss, to me, that's the bigger question at this point. I mean, who's going to be your president? Who's going to be your athletic director? Will you be able to exist and thrive under the same parameters that you have been in the last 10 years under Luana Simon and Mark Hollis? I mean, you know, Mark Hollis was in Tom Izzo's wedding. There's a bond. You know, they've known each other since the 1980s. I think to me, you know, you got two guys that are, you know, around the same age in their early 60s, early to mid 60s. I think it's less a question of will they get rid of them, more so do they want to stay on.
Yeah. And finally, how has the community continued to react to this? Is it in a state of shock? Do they roll with it better? How are they about this?
It's fatigue. I mean, there's no question. I mean, from our side on reporters to the average alum, to people within the community, there's a lot of fatigue with this. This goes all the way back to the football player issue back in early 2017. We're talking over a year and a half that really Michigan State has been under seemingly a constant barrage. But, I mean, the reality is a lot of these things happened and date back into the early 2000 or mid 2010. I mean, so you're talking, you know, a solid 10 years worth of stuff that's coming up now. So I think it has been fatiguing, and, you know, it seems like at some point, you know, you think you can move past it, but you really haven't, because something new pops up like that federal lawsuit. I don't know. Any day it feels like there still could be something new coming. But I think with having the settlement with the Nassar victims, that to me is going to be the big thing. Now, if Michigan State can go out and prove to be essentially and do the mission of the land-grant institution and make that change, I think that would go a long way to, first of all, making the alumni base feel a lot better about things, right, and secondly, making the community itself feel safer about things.
One of these days we'll get you back on. We'll talk about sports.
I would like that. That's the one nice thing about having paternity leave for a few weeks. I can step away from a lot of this. And, you know, it like I said, when I said it's fatiguing, it really is, because, I mean, you know, you get into this business to cover sports, and then you guys saw it with the Paterno situation, with the Sandusky situation and everything. I mean, sometimes sports morphs into things bigger than that and into real life, and I think that's kind of what we've seen here.
Chris, best of luck. Staggering hours of sleep.
Thanks, Steve. I'm on overnight duty, so it's kind of like my olden days on the early days of the sports side. So I'll get to watch a few more games now.
Well, look, I'm thrilled for you. I mean, that is such great news. And you're great parents, and congratulations.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Chris Solari, Lansing State Journal. Oh, my goodness, with twins. Now they have, you know, three girls now, so he's totally outnumbered, which is great. But twins. Wow. Not easy. Good luck. Oh, they're great parents. Great people. All right. So our appreciation to Chris Solari for taking the time out. Maybe it was a relief for him to get away for just about 15 minutes to talk with us, because he's got to go back to diaper duty there. Coming up in the next half hour, we'll talk about Matt Millen situation with Mark Wogenrich from the Allentown Morning Call. Mark's one of the, you know, we have a lot of great beat writers that cover Penn State. Mark is obviously one of them, And he did a great job of tracking down Matt and talking with him about his situation. And when Mark put the story out in the Allentown Morning Call, it then went national. Now everyone knows about Matt's situation. So we'll talk with him in the final half hour about that. Looking forward to it very much to get an update from Mark on how Matt is doing. Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Phillies coming up tonight, 7:05 first pitch, 6:30 the airtime on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. And by the way, I guess I'm obligated to mention the Indianapolis 500 is Sunday on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. Final half hour of the show. It's really moved today. Our thanks to Jordan Rodriguez, Charlotte Observer, who joined us in the opening half hour. We talked about the sale of the Carolina Panthers. A year ago, it would have been unexpected that the Panthers would be sold. Well, David Tepper, the minority owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, ended up buying them. The interesting element is that he had the one of the lower bids. He didn't have the highest bid. He did not have the highest bid for the team. But when someone steps forward and says, I'll buy your team and I'll pay cash at $2.275 billion, that normally is a pretty secure bid. I think I'll pay cash. Wow. There are not minority investors. He bought 100% of the team. So David Tepper is now the owner of the Carolina Panthers. And our thanks to Jordan Rodriguez for talking about that situation with us in the opening half hour. Sean Leahy previewing the Stanley Cup Easter Conference Final Game 7 from NBCSports.com in the second half hour of the show. Tampa Bay hosting Washington tonight, with the winner getting Vegas in the opening game of the Stanley Cup Final. Vegas, of course, took out Winnipeg in five games. Our thanks to Sean Leahy from NBCSports.com, who joined us in the second half hour of the show. By the way, Cleveland takes on the Celtics tonight, and that will be game five, pivotal fifth game in a series tied at two apiece at TD Garden this evening at 8:30. That is on ESPN tonight. And also our thanks in the last half hour to Chris Soleri from the Lansing State Journal with a lot of great information and insight as to the what's happening at Michigan State and the $500 million that was allocated for the victims of Larry Nassar, $425 million to the initial 332 victims that have come forward, another $75 million in the bank just in case others come forward along the way. And our thanks to Chris for the insight he gave us on that. Mark Wogenrich will join us in just a few moments. We'll talk to Mark about Matt Millen. Mark, one of the great beat writers that Penn State football happens to have. And he was able to get in touch with Matt. And when he put the story in the Allentown Morning Call, it then went national. And we'll talk with Mark about that in just a few moments. Today's show is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kim Jones, NFL Network, is going to join us on Friday. We're looking forward to that and get an update on how Saquon Barkley is doing. Of course, as we told you yesterday on the show, Christian Hackenberg was dealt yesterday by the Jets to the Oakland Raiders for a conditional seventh-round pick. the Raiders quarterback situation. Obviously, Derek Carr is the starter. Behind him is Connor Cook, again, Michigan State. E.J. Manuel is the other quarterback on the roster, the former first-round pick of the Buffalo Bills. Remember what I've talked about a couple of times, all right? If you are a first three-round pick, especially if you're a top two-round pick, you have to play your way out of the league. To not get a second contract, you have to play your way out of the league. If you're a 4-7 or a free agent to get that second contract, you got to play your way into the league. So E.J. Manuel's a perfect example. First round pick, people keep giving him chances. All right? So Christian Hackenberg goes out there and now is part of what John Gruden is trying to build. And by the way, Jason Kabinda and Saeed Blacknall are joining him out there with the Raiders. All right, let's bring in Mark Wogenrich, Allentown Morning Call. I mentioned a lot of outstanding beat writers, good people that is really good writers and reporters. Mark is absolutely one of them. Mark, it's always great to hear you. Welcome back. Great to have you on the show.
Doing well, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Thanks. Outstanding work on the Matt Millen story. What was?
Thank you.
No, really, it was outstanding. For you, what was the approach you wanted to take? Because obviously you had a base of knowledge to work with. So what was your approach in talking with Matt, who is usually pretty blunt about life?
Yeah, he's incredibly blunt about life. And I think that was a little bit part of it. It was more how he's approaching this. It's not the fact. I didn't really want to approach the fact that he has this rare disease. It's more how he's approaching it and the way he's facing it, you know, through him and his family. I got to know him, I've got to know him a lot of years around this area, not just in football, but in wrestling. He's a huge part of the wrestling community here in downtown Lehigh Valley, that District 11 wrestling. One of his sons wrestled. He's mm-hmm. very close with a bunch of wrestling coaches. He goes, he hosts a weekly Bible study that several high school and college wrestling coaches attend. And so, having covered like high school wrestling too, I would see him at big matches often. He loves it. He loves Penn State wrestling. You know, Cale Sanderson. He can't speak highly enough about Cale. So, within those communities, he's very well known and he's revered, and he does a lot of things for people in those communities that a lot of people don't know about. And specifically, like I said, being a very devout person, being a Christian and hosting the Bible study, these are people who got to know him really well. And they would just tell me that he's going, fighting this, going through this disease with kind of just an uncommon level of positivity. And his wife said the same thing too, that stems in part from, his faith, but also in how he approaches life and how he's approached football too. So it was more than that. It was more than just, okay, Matt is finally ready to say something publicly about it, because it's not that this was not well known. I mean, a lot of people knew that he was going through the chemotherapy and that he was mm-hmm. facing this disease, but he hadn't gone public with it. I think part of it is like to say, look, I'm not, just tell people that, look, I'm not at the end here just yet, but also to bring to some awareness to a very rare disease, kind of the one, something similar to what the uplifting athletes would, the awareness they would bring to those diseases too, through Live for Life and things like that.
Yeah, I know. When Jack and I saw him at Maryland, and I had breakfast mm-hmm. with Matt the next day, but when we saw him on that Friday night, he looked ashen. I'm like, holy mackerel. I mean, and Dan Dierdorf had told Jack and me about where he was, so we were forewarned. What struck me is when I talked to Matt at the Blue-White game, he told me, he said, one thing that's helped me out is that athletes know their bodies. He said, and that's what's helped me out in terms of figuring out like something wasn't quite right. Is that the impression you got from him too?
Oh, definitely. I think the first time that he had mentioned it was at the Maryland game to me too, because he was coming out of the booth and kind of walking gingerly. And I said, I was like, oh, the hip bothering you, something like that, a lower body thing, whatever. And then she said, no, I'm going through chemotherapy. And it was that particular week had taken a bit of a toll out of him.
Yeah.
But as he was going through and seeing doctors and some, it just seems like some of the interactions he had with medical people where they would say, wow, your numbers here, you know, things like the testing they had done about specifically regarding like heart function and heart mm-hmm. function level. And he would say, these doctors would tell me, you really should be in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And he would say, well, my 30% heart function is going to be better than your 30% heart function. That's a measure of his, you know, I think for one, his ego. He does have a little bit of that too. But two, also, he does really believe that. He really believes that his, you know, having been an athlete and having known how to take care of his body as an athlete, that he, even with its, you know, diminished capacity, now that he still knows, you know, how physical he can be and how, what kind of, you know, when he's feeling bad and when he's feeling good and what he can do. So I think he really does know that maybe better than just kind of us civilians and us laymen.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. I'll say this though. He has not lost his sense of humor, because when I was talking to him at the Blue White game, he made a couple of jokes to me about,
oh gosh, yeah,
about his condition. And that's the part that, you know, that when you walk away, you feel awful about it, but you like you still laugh because Matt made you laugh.
Yeah. Oh, there. And I, you know, I could write the other half of the underside of that story is all the Matt off the record.
Yeah. Okay. Let me put it this way. A couple of the jokes he told me were absolutely off the record. Okay.
Oh yeah. And I could write that too. That would give kind of a sense of how he, you know, how he approaches. That's just his positivity and his outlook, and you know, his family tells him the same thing. But, you know, I went to, you know, I actually went to his house the one night for a Bible study with the guys he hangs out with, and it was off color, you know. I mean, they did their devout, you know, 30 to 45 minutes, an hour, where they really kind of broke down this, you know, a section of the Bible, you know, a verse of the Bible. They really discussed it, studied it, and applied it to current life. And they went back and told some wrestling stories and off-color jokes that, you know, were a little bluer than maybe the Bible passage would have required. But I think all of that helps them, I think, manage.
Yeah, it helps. It helps him cope. Mm-hmm. There's not, yeah. And really, mm-hmm. it's Matt's own version of the Bible study. So, I mean,
it's yeah, absolutely.
Which, well, I will say, I say in a fun, affectionate way.
Absolutely, but he does really know. He studies the Bible.
Yes, he does.
He knows it very well, and he's quite introspective about it. And it comes from not just a, you know, a place of study, and not just belief. I was saying, like, it's not just faith, but he studies his faith too. He puts a lot of time and effort into that. I think, and his, you know, his wife is a counselor, and in that regard too. So they also come at this from a perspective of, yes, we're fighting it, and we're going to every, you know, through every medical avenue available to us. He's been to the Mayo Clinic,
yes,
two Mayo Clinics, I believe, Sloan Kettering. He's gone, you know, he's going to go, you know, he went to Cedar Sinai. He's been there.
Yep.
So it's not like, you know, he's seeing the best, you know, doctors he possibly can, but he also has this, and it comes from his Bible study and his faith that there's, and his wife said it, you know, he's really not afraid of where this may lead ultimately if it progresses.
And for those who may not realize, mm-hmm. Matt's mm-hmm. wife is the former Pat Spezak, who was a gymnast mm-hmm. here at Penn State.
Right.
The same, they went to school together. All right. Matt would say, enough of me. Talked about the football
Absolutely.
Team. That's exactly what Matt said. Enough of me. We talk about the football team, Steve. Jeez. What do you think coming out of the spring? What's this general impression you have about this team?
I thought they looked, and they sounded, and you hear this kind of thing every year, but they sounded energized, at least coming out of spring. I heard several guys say, well, our attitude, there was a real confidence among position groups, and they felt like they answered maybe some questions they had internally, not necessarily about like, you know, rosters and lineups and two deeps and things like that, but they sounded, because that'll, the coaches will determine that obviously, but they sounded like some of the kids answered questions about who's going to fill in those gaps of the players that they lost. I mean, you look at not just the athleticism of a guy like Saquon Barkley and Marcus Allen and Grant Haley and Jason Kamen and on and on and on, but those guys have been around a long time and had really solidified themselves as the mature top of that team. they were, you know, that was, you know, as much leadership, I think, as Penn State had had since, you know, maybe that 12 team when it had a lot of seniors on it. Right. So that last year, you know, those two teams, 16 and 17, a lot of success and a lot of leadership that came out of it. And it sounded like those kids, at least internally, maybe answered some of those questions, like who's going to fill those voids? Who's going to fill, if we don't know who the middle linebacker is going to be yet, at least we know guys who can assume some of the you know, the behind the scenes, the locker room work that Jason Kabinda did, or who's going to be that high octane personality that Marcus Allen had, who's going to be kind of a quieter, but, you know, a player you would listen to when they speak, as such, you know, like a Grant Haley, and, you know, like the personalities, and, you know, Allen and Gesicki and Brendan Mann and all that sort of thing. I did get a sense that maybe they feel a little better about that aspect of it coming out of the spring.
Mark Walgren-Rich from the Allentown Morning Call continues with us. And the Trace McSorley factor adds not just the quarterback, because having a returning quarterback is invaluable, but the leadership aspect of it, Mark.
3 years, yeah, obviously 3 years as a starting quarterback. Trace is not, I don't get a sense, excuse me, Trace is going to be a screamer on the sideline. I don't get that sense, and I think James Franklin has said that for 2 years. His dad told me that too, that he's not going to be he's not the big voice, but man, is he, I think he's a big presence to me, that he's now done it. He has 2 years and 22 wins in college worth of success behind him. And he's also the guy, I think, in a year that James Franklin is going to say, when your best players are your hardest workers, similar to what he said about Saquon Barkley, that is going to be noticed it's going to be noticed and trickle down through that team. Having two of them, too, having him and, like, Tommy, I almost get the sense that Tommy Stevens might be a little more of that bigger personality, vocal kind of quarterback leader. Having the two of them at you know, pillaring, you know, the top of that offense, I think that really looks, that bodes well for at least an offensive leadership perspective for next year and, you know, and 19.
Mark, one final question. You're right there on the Pennsylvania-Jersey border. So yesterday, of course, was the ruling by the Supreme Court, which was not unexpected. But it was, you know, in other words, it was a state's rights ruling. Well, part of the state's rights ruling allows them to have gambling, and New Jersey's going to kick it into another gear. Any sense on your part how this is going to play out across the border? Are you going to wait and see like everybody else?
No, wait and see, but I think it's going to go quickly here. I mean, I did just read a story today that Monmouth Park in New Jersey is looking to have its sports betting up by Memorial Day.
Right.
That just seems to me that's a little accelerated, but yeah, I would imagine we're going to be looking. And I know New Jersey had some deals with like a British agency to open maybe some like OTB kind of locations. I would think by football season, by the NFL college football season, we're going to be looking at it. And we have, you know, at least in Pennsylvania has a number of casinos that I would, you know, that are going to be just waiting for it. And they're really probably well prepared to set up, if not Las Vegas style sports book, at least sports book, access to betting. I think this is going to go pretty quickly because of the state law that has been passed last year and the preparedness with which the casinos will have. And one thing that in Bethlehem, there's a casino that's going to be changing ownership. So that might have maybe some effect. But I think overall, I think it's going to go fast. I think we'll be able to bet on NFL and college games by September.
Mark, always great seeing you, and it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time very much, my friend.
Absolutely. As always, thanks, Steve.
Mark Walgren-Rich from the Allentown Morning Call. Great work he did on tracking down Matt Millen, talking with Matt, getting the story out there about Matt needing a heart transplant. Look, it's been hard for Matt. It's been hard for Pat. It's been hard for the kids, obviously. And, of course, all the people around that think the world of Matt. And if anybody can come through this and come out on the other side of it better than ever, it would be Matt Millen. He's got that kind of guts and determination. And as Matt told me, I mentioned this to Mark during the interview. When I talked to Matt, he said, look, athletes, he said, what helped me, I'm speaking, this is what Matt told me, he said, Steve, what really helped me was
being an athlete. He says athletes know their body. He said, and I could just tell something just was not right. He said, I could just tell.
Well, obviously it wasn't right. And so Matt Millen, we'll find out as time goes. But, you know, if anybody can go out there and end up beating this and getting and coming out better on the other side, it would be Matt Millen. All right. Our thanks to Mark Wogenrich for joining us today from the Allentown Morning Call. Chris Soleri, Lansing State Journal, who joined us in the previous half hour. Jordan Rodrigue, opening half hour, Charlotte Observer. And Sean Leahy, NBCSports.com, in the second half hour. As we talked about the sale of the Carolina Panthers to David Tepper, about the Stanley Cup Eastern Conference Final, about the $500 million that Michigan State's allocated for victims of Larry Nassar, and Mark Wogenrich on Matt Millen. If you missed any of it today, check out the podcast at SteveJonesShow.com, and you can go in there and plenty of intriguing interviews. We'll be back tomorrow, obviously, another show, and I just want to let everyone know that Kim Jones is going to be joining us on Friday. Kim Jones is going to be joining us on Friday. We've had a request from the suit to have several IndyCar drivers on, and we're just completely booked. So it just didn't work out. Sorry. All right. So that's, by the way, coming up on Sunday. Formula One will be in the morning, the Grand Prix of Monaco. My game plan for the Grand Prix of Monaco is the same as it was for last Saturday's royal wedding. I intend to sleep in. Then of course, there'll be the Indy 500. And then down to Charlotte for the NASCAR race, the 600. All right. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Thanks for joining us today on News Radio 1070 WKOK.